definitely was a good-looking young man.
She was very attracted to him.
He was a nice guy. Fun to hang around with.
Felt that he had thoughts about females that were not healthy.
I was so sick of hiding and being scared.
They told me I would be next.
It was just agony to think about the body of somebody you love being just dumped in a river like a dog.
I wanted him dead.
May 1990, Asheville, North Carolina. Population, 62,000. It's the day before Memorial Day weekend, and Jamie Hurley hasn't turned up for work.
That Friday night, about 6 o'clock, I got a call from Jamie's father.
Oh, hi, Mr. Hurley. How are you?
He asked me if I knew where Jamie was. He said that her employer had been trying to call, and all they could get was a busy signal. So I told him I would go over to the house and see what was going on. It was a cute little house, and it was never locked, and so people could just come and go. First thing I noticed was that the sofa was made up for someone to be sleeping there.
Jamie!
And there was an indention in the pillow, obviously, where someone had been lying. I had this really, really eerie feeling. I went into the bedroom. The bed was perfectly made up. The sheets were turned down, and her answering machine was there, right by the bed, and something was wrong with it. It was just clicking. It was just over and over and over because the tape had been removed. It was very chilling. So I called Mr. Hurley, and I said, this doesn't look good, and I think maybe you should call the police.
The police are called, but it's the start of the long weekend and not a priority case.
The policeman was very nice, but he said, she's an adult, she's free to go where she wants, and 99 times out of 100, people will show up. Just give it some time. We got the word out, and all her friends came to the house.
I was out of town when the call came that Jamie was missing. I was at my in-laws down east, and immediately came back up here.
We were there Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. We just hung out at the house all day.
Tuesday morning after the long weekend, and there's still no sign of Jamie. Asheville Police Department goes into action.
Weekend.
Sergeant Ted Lambert is assigned to this missing person case. He's convinced that she's probably off on a long weekend with a boyfriend and that it'll turn out to be nothing.
We're all bewildered. We didn't know where to turn or what to do next. And I don't think anyone wanted to go thinking that she had been murdered.
Hi, I'm Detective Ted Lambert.
I was the first one he interviewed. What did I think had happened? That kind of thing.
Was there anything suspicious? Anything out of the ordinary?
Sarah tells the detective that just before Jamie disappeared, she had a visit from someone from her past. 5 years earlier, Jamie worked at a juvenile correction center. One of the boys she had helped there, now a young man, had reached out to her.
Jamie worked in the aggressive children's unit with the younger boys.
She met Leslie Warren there when he was 15.
Leslie Warren was in for kidnapping and assault.
Leslie's a troubled soul. He was very quiet, a loner. Just didn't have good feelings about Leslie. I felt that he had thoughts about females that were not healthy.
Leslie, he was more responsive to her, and she built a very good rapport with him.
What is it that you would like to do?
One of the things that she loved was reading.
I heard you like to read now and then.
He was special to her because she felt that she had made a real difference with him, that he and she understood each other.
Do you have a favorite author at all?
Was she too trusting of Leslie? Yes. I told her that.
I think what concerns me, though, is the behavior around the females, such as yourself and others that are here, that really concerns me.
I cautioned Jamie to be leery of Leslie, to stay away from him. But she believed that everyone had a good side, everyone had a bad side. But that good side outweighed the bad.
No, of course, it's fine.
Jamie hadn't seen Leslie for 5 years, but out of the blue, he'd called and asked if he could drop by.
He told her that he was in some kind of trouble and he needed to talk. And so she told him that he could come over to the house. Nothing would have delighted her more than to have one of her former clients turn to her for advice.
Leslie Warren is now 22, an ex-military man and married to childhood sweetheart Tracy.
Leslie came back to visit the center one day. He was in the area visiting family. I kind of took that face value that he had been doing well, and we were talking. Jamie called. So it gave Leslie the phone, and they talked for a while. After they hung up, he said they would contact each other in the future.
This was a very different Leslie Warren. He seemed more confident. He seemed to have turned his life around and was married with 2 children. She found herself beaming with pride.
Leslie was a good-looking young man. He took good care of himself. And I think he maybe used that to his advantage.
4 days after the disappearance of Jamie Hurley, detectives pulled Warren in for questioning.
Warren seemed very relaxed, very straightforward, pleasant, polite young man.
I'd like to thank you for coming in to talk to me today, Mr. Warren.
My pleasure, Detective.
Lambert. Ted Lambert.
Yes, thank you.
I wanted to talk to you because your name came up in a missing persons investigation.
Oh, who?
Jamie Hurley.
She's missing?
So you know Jamie?
Of course. She was my social worker when I was 15, and we go back for a while. She really helped me out.
Did you see anybody else? Was there anybody else in her place?
No, not that I remember. It was just myself and Jamie. We had dinner, chatted about the past, and now it's around 8 o'clock. Do you think something happened?
He assured officers that, yes, he'd been there, but he'd left the previous night.
So you didn't stay over at her place?
No, I had to go home. I worked the next day. You know how it is.
He had such warm charm and seemed to them such a normal person that Warren was not detained by the cops.
But ever the cautious investigator, Detective Lambert keeps Warren's van and orders a forensic examination. Released from police custody, and with his marriage to Tracy failing, Warren heads over to see his new girlfriend, Bronya Owenby.
I met Leslie Warren at the community store where he had a job there. We went out a couple times, and he started coming to my house, and sometimes he brought groceries and just hung out, talking, drinking. He was fun to hang around with. He was a nice guy.
Women are attracted to the nice guy with the deceptive baby face good looks.
We went to the Asheville Mall one day, and on our way back, he just pulled a pistol out. Started shooting it out the window. I asked him, what are you, crazy? You know, there's no telling where that bullet's gonna come down. Scared me. Because, you know, I didn't like stuff like that. I was loud and liked to party, but leave the gun in the car.
Meanwhile, a detailed search of Warren's van has turned up a woman's purse.
They brought the purse over to my house for me to identify.
I think this may be Jamie's.
Yes.
They said they had also found a sheet in Leslie's van that matched a sheet at Jamie's house. When I saw the purse, it made me very fearful that he had done something with her.
One morning, Leslie said that there was a detective coming to talk to him about some missing woman. And I thought that was weird.
Leslie Warren is hauled back to the police station.
I know you've been lying to me.
This time, the cops aren't charmed.
I found a purse in your van. You stayed there, didn't you?
Under pressure, Warren claimed that he'd taken cocaine with Jamie Hurley and that she'd overdosed.
He said Jamie was shooting up cocaine, which is something she would never, ever have done, that she OD'd. And he had panicked and dumped her body in the French Broad River. It was just agony to think about the body of somebody you love being just dumped in a river like a dog. It was just awful.
Detectives are in a bind. They don't buy Warren's story, but without a body, they can't hold him for long.
They searched the river, I guess maybe 3 days.
Jamie's friends join in the search.
They felt it would be good if we did help. It would give us something to do besides just stressing over what was happening. We would have some way to be involved.
I'd like to thank you for joining our search today. Very much appreciated, the extra manpower.
Some of us who were working were allowed to have the time off today to go and search for her.
It was just really heartwarming to see all the community volunteers that came out.
I think basically it was all of us coming together to try to support each other, because Jamie had touched all our lives, and for her to just suddenly disappear like that, we were just all, I guess, in a state of shock.
Leslie Warren told us that he dropped the body up here. Where he wanted to look, you see in the undergrowth, check closely because the body may get snagged in some branches. One thing to also pay special attention to is smell. Decomposing body, very strong odor. So if you don't want to get too close, it's okay, just call the house.
I can remember talking to Jamie's aunt, who was there, and I said to her, this must be what hell is like. And she said, I don't think it's this bad.
The police department had told us what type things to look for. We knew she was somewhere, but we couldn't find her.
Despite a huge search, there's no sign of Jamie.
I remember seeing Ted Lambert on the riverbank, bent down, and he looked so tired, so discouraged.
It's a bitter blow for her friends and family, and for Detective Ted Lambert. Forced to let him walk, Lambert believes he may be letting Jamie's killer slip through his fingers.
Come on.
Warren's bond is set at $1,000. His grandfather coughs up the cash, and he walks free.
Like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. Blood all over him was wet. It was raining outside. He said, I got caught stealing the pot plant, so I had to stab the guy.
It's not a big deal.
You stab someone, it's not a big deal.
They're coming
out. There's blood all over you.
It was horrible. That scared me.
Lizzie, I can't deal with this. What's going on with you?
He asked me if he could stay at my house.
Please.
I let him clean up, but I told him he had to go. I wouldn't let him stay at my house.
The next day, Warren turns up at a motorcycle dealership to test drive the Kawasaki. He drives off on it and never comes back.
Meanwhile, Detective Lambert reaches out to neighboring police forces. Do they have anything on Warren? In Spartanburg, South Carolina, he catches a break. One of the investigators there happens to remember the name. Last year, Leslie Warren had been questioned about another homicide.
He walks over to a filing cabinet, pulls out a file on an unsolved murder. The file is less than 1 year old, and it refers to the murder of Velma Gray.
42-year-old Velma Faye Gray was a singer in a local dance band. She disappeared while driving home after a gig in Asheville. Her body had been dumped in a lake. Her killer was never found.
My sister, Velma Faye, played in the band with me and my wife. The band was Reflections of Greenville. She was a singer, had a beautiful voice. Everybody loved her, and she played keyboards and had one of the best harmony voices of anyone that we ever sang with. She could pick up a harmony part, and actually she could teach us the harmony parts. Most of the time, Velma Faye rode in the motorhome or the van with us. This particular evening, she drove up. That evening when we got through, she left a little ahead of me. We said our goodbyes, and that was the last time I saw her.
Greenville is right at the foot of the Blue Ridge Mountains, and there is a steep stretch, and it tends to be foggy, and she ran off the road into a ditch. A carload of teenagers drove by, and she explained to them she'd run into a ditch. Could they help her? They were trying to figure out exactly what to do when they saw a semi, a tractor trailer, pull up behind Velma Gray's car.
Thanks.
They figured, okay, everything's fine. The trucker's going to help this lady. So they drove off.
When questioned later, the teens remembered the truck's distinctive logo.
There was a logo on the cowling, and it was AmCan, American Canadian Trucking. And the company is based in Anderson, South Carolina.
I just drove my car into the ditch.
There's a grocery store 3 miles down the way. If you'd like, you can hop into my truck. Totally fine.
At 8 a.m. the following morning, Velma's body was found by fishermen, floating in Lake Bowen. The autopsy revealed she'd been beaten and strangled.
We started looking for the truck driver as a witness. It was amazing to me why he would not come forward and say, I'm the one who was there at the scene.
Detective Lambert digs deeper. He checks through AmCam employment records from the time of Velma Gray's murder and finds the name Leslie Warren.
Lambert heads back to Asheville, where he pulls together a small team to investigate Warren. He strongly suspects that he's behind more than one murder.
First up, detectives pull in Warren's ex-girlfriend, Bronya Owenby.
North Carolina law enforcement came to my house and picked me up and told me that I needed to go to the Asheville Police Department. That's when I learned that they were looking for him.
Bronya mentions that she was with Warren in his truck on the same night of Velma's murder.
I told them that Leslie Warren and I went to South Carolina and stole the truck.
Warren was one of their regular drivers, but he often stole trucks from Amcan to go joyriding after hours.
I didn't know we were stealing it, but he just walks right in, grabs the keys, and partied back up here in the truck. We parked it up, and he just sat there. Wouldn't come out. I told him, I said, you know, what's the matter with you? Come on out. Drink a beer. He took me back to my house, and evidently after he dropped me off, that's when he went to South Carolina.
Detectives tell Bronya they suspect her ex murdered Velma Gray, and she needs to watch her back.
It was scary. They told me I would be next, that he would hunt for me next. I told them that I was going to go get a gun and that if he came to my door, that I would blow his head off. And one of the guys said, you got to do what you got to do.
Now more than ever, detectives believe Leslie Warren murdered both Jamie Hurley and Velma Gray. The trouble is, they've got no proof and Warren has vanished. With no new leads, they delve into Warren's history. Behind the good looks and easy charm, they discover a man with a dark past.
Leslie came from a childhood where the father was abusive, that the father had burned down the family trailer, and that Leslie had witnessed a lot of this abuse.
As a teen, Leslie flunked school and turned to alcohol and drugs. At 15, he tried to rape his 30-year-old next-door neighbor.
He was at her house trying to help her out with some chores, and she sent him down to the basement for something. And while he was down there, he called her and said, come down here, I need you to look at something. She went down the steps and he was pointing to something. She looked over at it and he wrapped a rope around her neck and started strangling her. One of her relatives heard the commotion and came downstairs and socked him in the face. That's the only thing that saved the poor lady. And that's when he was sent to the Juvenile Evaluation Center.
The Juvenile Evaluation Center, where Warren would meet counselor Jamie Hurley. And now she's dead, and Detective Lambert knows he's responsible, but can't prove it. Until the case is blown wide open.
Unwittingly, this vital piece of evidence comes from the one person who was trying to protect Warren.
No, ma'am, I assure you we have not been harassing your son.
His loyal mother, Phyllis.
What were they talking to his son about?
Warren's mother reveals that 3 years ago, he was a suspect in yet another murder.
She casually mentions that Warren had been interviewed 3 years earlier in upstate New York about another missing girl.
No, we're not involved with the upstate police department. What were they talking to his son about?
Her name was Patsy Vineyard, and she went missing when Warren was serving in a nearby military base.
Another unsolved murder where Warren is the suspect. Another body found floating in a lake. Detective Lambert gets right on the phone to the New York State Police Department.
Senior investigator Bob Cook tells Lambert that he had his suspicions about Warren at the time, but he had an alibi for his movements, and he didn't even come across as a bad guy. In fact, as Cook said, he had this baby face and looked so goddamn innocent.
As with the Velma Gray murder, detectives in New York had ruled Warren out of the investigation. But for North Carolina detectives, the puzzle pieces are fitting perfectly. They fear they've got a serial killer on their hands. Worse still, he's on the loose. Unbeknownst to police, Warren has driven his stolen motorbike 200 miles east on Interstate 40.
The legend Warren turned up in High Point, North Carolina. He came here to visit a friend. She worked at a bar.
But she's not working that night.
So he kind of just hung around, and he drank heavily, hard liquor, tequila.
Around 3 a.m., my partner and I were dispatched to investigate a suspicious male who appeared to be intoxicated trying to push his motorcycle. He had dropped it and seemed to be having a hard time getting it moving again. I asked him what he was doing, and he answered he had been at the bar at the Radisson Hotel and may have been drinking, just had too much to drink, and instead of driving home, he was going to walk his motorcycle back to a motel where he was staying nearby. My partner put him in the back of his car and took him to the motel.
The local cops have no idea the man they've just assisted is wanted in connection with 3 homicides. Next day, back at the same downtown bar in High Point, smooth-talking Warren is flirting with the bartender.
Are you sticking around? Well, it depends.
Catherine Johnson also worked in High Point part-time as a bartender.
Yeah, I saw you on the motorcycle outside.
I do. Wanna come for a ride?
I mean, I'm done in about an hour.
I don't know what it is about some women and motorcycles, or maybe it's the same thing about men with guns. I don't know, but she was very attracted to him.
Cheers.
21-year-old Catherine has no idea of the danger she's in.
Leslie Warren knew that they were going to be on the lookout for a stolen motorcycle, but it sure didn't stop him riding around the streets of High Point. She was on the seat there behind him, swigging from a beer bottle, having just a great time. They wound up going to a picnic together that was put on for the employees at Radisson. They played softball together, they drank together. As they were leaving, Leslie Warren commented to one of the people drinking. He says, "You know, I'm going to have her tonight," and then repeated, "I'm going to have her. Just wait and see." They were in Catherine's car, driving around. They turned down this little side road to this deserted park.
...200 miles away in Asheville, North Carolina, Warren is wanted by police. Detective Ted Lambert is building a case against him for the murders of Jane Hurley, Velma Gray, and Patsy Vineyard.
He fixes his hopes on Warren's wife, Tracy. Will she do the right thing and spill the beans on her drug-taking, womanizing husband? He heads back down to Spartanburg, where Tracy lives with their 2 children.
Leslie Warren and Tracy are estranged. Detective Lambert notices Tracy is wearing a ring stolen from murder victim Patsy Vineyard.
Do you know why I asked you to come in today?
Well, I assume it's about Leslie.
Your husband, Leslie, yes.
Not my husband anymore. We're separated.
Oh, really? We've been trying to find him because we think he might be messed up with something a little unpleasant. We're wondering, do you know where he might be?
Perhaps visiting one of his dealers?
That's a lovely ring you have there.
Oh, this whole thing.
Yeah. Do you mind if I have a closer look at that?
Sure.
God, that is beautiful. Isn't it sparkling? Have you seen him recently?
No.
He's not been around?
No.
Can I show you something?
Sure.
You might find this curious.
He pulls out a photograph of Patsy Vineyard wearing the same ring. Under pressure, Tracy admits it was a gift from Warren. And there's more.
She revealed that Warren had confessed to killing Patsy Vineyard.
He told me that her husband asked him to, because she had cancer and he didn't want to see her suffer.
For Detective Lambert, it's no longer a supposition. Armed with Tracy's admission, he's certain Warren's guilty. Now, he needs to catch him.
Can we put a trap and a trace on your phone? Can we do that?
Yes.
Asheville Police Department put together a plan. They will tap Tracy's phone and wait for him to call her.
A wanted poster describing Warren as a highly dangerous serial killer is faxed to law enforcement offices all over the nation.
A massive manhunt swings into action across three counties. And later that day, Lambert gets an unexpected visit.
Brother Laren turns up at the police station. He tells officers that he knows where Jamie Hurley's body is hidden. Warren had pitched up at his trailer a few months earlier and suggested they take a ride.
Leslie?
What?
What did you do?
She OD'd last night.
He needs Laren's help to dispose of the body. They stop in the mountains. Warren drags Jamie's body down the side of a hill. Then Warren scrabbles out a shallow grave. Getting back into the car, he tells Laren to keep his mouth shut.
Warren's brother leads officers to a remote spot deep in the Blue Ridge Mountains.
I got a phone call from a friend of mine who had a police radio in her house. And she said, I think they found Jamie's body.
It was relatively steep, slope down, dropping down below us. They had strung some ropes, so I climbed 250 feet down where the remains were located. We proceeded to uncover the body. The law enforcement agencies had also brought dental records and confirmed that the remains were in fact Miss Hurley.
They did the autopsy, of course, and found out that she was strangled and that there was no cocaine in her body at all. So much for Warren's story about Jamie O'Dean. Didn't happen.
Finally, Detective Lambert knows he has the right man. But the clock is ticking. Warren could strike again at any moment.
They have little to go on as he seems to have disappeared into thin air. But they're about to get the biggest break in the entire case. At 2 p.m. that day, Tracy takes a call from Warren.
Get on that.
Police need Warren to stay on the line long enough to make the trace.
Where is that, you know?
He's phoning his wife because he needs some money.
Can you get a trace on that?
Tracy keeps him talking. Experts get a fix on a location 200 miles away in High Point, North Carolina.
You sure about that? Great work, thank you.
The police response is swift and decisive. Twenty minutes later, High Point detectives converge on a small wooden house.
A group of patrol officers, uniformed people, and detectives who went to the house. We were concerned about covering all the exits in case he wanted to try to run for it.
Police block off the street. They tell residents to stay in their houses. They're going to have to try and take Warren without violence.
We called the girl who was renting the house and said, is Leslie Warren there?
This is the police. Put on Leslie Warren, ma'am.
We have asked surrounded, you know, come out, you're under arrest.
Officers know Warren's inside, but he refuses to come out. They make their move.
While officers inch across the yard, a SWAT team takes aim at the front door. The handle slowly turns from the inside. And there's Warren.
Didn't make an effort to run or struggle or anything.
He wasn't upset. It was just like he expected his arrest would happen.
Detectives have a strong case against Warren, but it's mostly circumstantial. They need a full confession.
You got 3 hours, you're gonna be here in 3 hours.
And pull together an audacious ruse to make him crack.
Ted had talked to behavioral profilers at the FBI, asking them, how can we make it as uncomfortable as possible for Leslie Eugene Warren to make him talk? And they had suggested making it look as big as possible. So they had a whole room at the Asheville Police Department set up as the Leslie Warren Task Force.
They had pictures of each of the victims blown up all around the room. They had fingerprint cards all around the room. They had filing cabinets with drawers marked with the name of each victim. The inference that, boy, we got a whole drawer full of evidence on each one of these cases. We got your fingerprints on all these cases. We know what you've done.
They had boxes of pizza open like they were working 24 hours a day on this. It was brilliant police work on Ted's part.
Now, in actuality, there was no evidence.
Cuffed and shackled, Warren is slowly walked right through the fake incident room.
He wasn't there more than a couple of minutes because they were looking for shock value.
Any longer, and Warren might see through the fakery.
They had arranged for Ted Lambert to be the only person to talk to him in that room.
Hey, Leslie. How you doing?
And Warren's eyes just hit the floor. He didn't pick his head up again.
The interview room has been specially prepared as well. The chair legs have been sawn down, literally, to keep Warren off balance.
Ted Lambert said, Leslie, you saw what was in that room. The only thing you've got going for you is the truth. You need to tell us the truth.
Jamie Hurley? You killed her?
Within minutes, Warren is confessing. Yes, he killed Jamie Hurley.
Her also?
Yes, he killed Velma Gray. Yes, he killed Patsy Vineyard.
Why'd you kill him?
I don't know.
Chillingly, he said, I just kill him. No real reason.
There was one instance. Leslie and I were having sex. And he just slipped his hand up around my throat. He didn't put any pressure on it. But I couldn't figure out what the hell that was about. And then come to find out, that's how he killed these women. I don't know why he didn't kill me. I don't know.
The interview is all but over.
One more thing.
When Warren starts talking about a fourth victim.
Oh, by the way, there's this woman down in High Point I killed. Everybody got real quiet, their ears pricked up, and he started to describe the murder of Katherine Johnson.
Warren tells officers he met Katherine only last weekend in a bar, and they went for a drive. After he had sex with her, he placed his hands around her throat and strangled her to death.
It takes more than a minute to strangle somebody to death. Just watch the clock. It is a long, intimate murder.
He was devoid of empathy. I'm not so sure he even got a huge adrenaline rush out of it. And at that moment, he felt like it. And he just strangled her to death right out there in the middle of that field. Picked her body up and loaded her into the trunk. Then he drove the car away and he wound up parking it in the Radisson parking lot. He reversed in. He wanted the trunk to be back against the wall where nobody would be likely to smell or find the body for a while.
Warren, under armed escort, is driven back to High Point to find Catherine's body.
They assembled a forensic squad and they went over to the Radisson and they did find her vehicle reverse parked into a parking place. They noticed the large number of flies around the trunk and in the trunk, Catherine's body. There was a high degree of decomposition. And it smelled bad. It was the awful remains of a beautiful young lady.
Like many successful serial killers, Leslie Warren had an unassuming quality about him. something that did not cause people to take alarm at his presence. Whether you call that charm or whether you call that manipulation, it knocks a wall down. And Warren possessed that.
Leslie Warren's trials for multiple murder open in September 1993 in Greenville, South Carolina.
He came in, he was not very big, he was not imposing. I'd always thought if somebody walked in the room, you would know that that person was a serial killer. The temperature of the room would drop 15 degrees. Nothing like that happened. He just looked like somebody from down the street. He did not look remarkable at all. And that to me was a huge surprise.
During the trial, Warren just sat there. I don't recall any emotion at all.
He just stared straight ahead, very emotionless, no facial changes or anything.
He would answer the judge's questions directly, but other than that, he just sat very composed.
I think that kind of angered a lot of us. How dare you just sit there knowing what you did, not even to the family, not even to the friends to say I'm sorry or anything. It was just that same blank stare the whole time he was in there.
I was pushing for the death sentence. I wanted him dead. First time I saw him, just instinctively, I said, let me have him.
I'll deal with him.
It was a nightmare. They put guards in front of me, and I guess they were afraid I might be an outburst or something of that nature.
When the death sentence for the murder of Jamie Hurley is announced, her brother Lee stands up in the court. As Leslie Warren is ushered past him, Lee Hurley lights a match.
Hey, Leslie!
I was so sick of hiding and being scared. And I just wanted to go on with my life. I carried a gun with me for a long time until the day that they caught him. A big hooray went through the whole house, you know, and that I was safe. I felt relieved that no more women were gonna get hurt by him.